is going on, my people? Happy Tuesday. Maybe it's Wednesday, maybe it's Thursday. That's a great part about a podcast. You can listen whenever you want. Big show coming up, but I got to hammer a couple things home. Two things. One, if you're listening through Colin's feed and you like the show, I need you to subscribe to the Three and Out podcast. Separate from Colin's feed, same show. It's got its own feed. Go subscribe. Apple, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, subscribe to that feed. If you're an Apple iTunes user, leave a review. Would greatly appreciate that. For those of you that want to get questions answered on the show, my name, at John Middlecoff, is my Instagram. DMs, wide open. You fire in those direct messages, you get your question answered here. After we talk about things like trust the process, why it wouldn't work in the NFL. Cole Beasley, who kind of was a polarizing topic Friday, Saturday over the weekend with his vaccination takes, talked to some people in the NFL, want to touch on that. And then the Bears and kind of their situation in regards to a stadium and just some overall thoughts on stadium, taxes, the angles that typically get attacked by the media. And then, of course, the Middlecoff mailbag. Like I said, shoot me a direct message. Trust the process is a statement that has become very synonymous in sports when you think about teams tanking, right? And tanking has been something that I don't feel we really talked about the first 20 years of my life. And I'm talking post, like, you know, I'm 35 years old. So in the 90s and the 2000s, occasionally it would come up. I would say the last decade, it's become something that we talk a lot about. It became such an issue in the NBA, they changed the draft lottery odds. Theo Epstein and the Astros management literally tried to blow it up and hit rock bottom and build the organizations up. And it worked in baseball with Theo and with the Astros. Now, they might have cheated. I mean, they did, but, you know, it's hard to quantify what it really equaled in terms of success or not. Like, would they still have won? They got really good players. They're in first place now. But, like, tangibly, it worked in baseball, basketball, failure. In football, that is so much different. Then when you look at the other two sports, trust the process. When you talk about, and Saban uses this all the time, the process talks about leading to winning. Trust the process is like, listen, guys, we are going to suck for several years. Sit down, shut up, and take it. But ultimately, you're kind of promising them championships. Because a lot of teams get to the playoffs without some process. They just compete and maybe they get slightly above 500. I mean, it happens in the NFL all the time, especially now there's seven teams. You just keep swinging, you win some games, boom, you're the Browns. They didn't really have a technically they tried to do the process as well, but their process was a disaster until they hired the right coach. I think the main difference in football, and I'll give Ryan Russillo credit. I've heard him say this in the past, and I think he's right. The reason in basketball it was so celebrated, because so many of the NBA media viewed themselves as, I could have done that. And the reality is, and what Sam Hinkie and the Sixers did, blow it up and try to lose for 3+ years straight, my mom could have done. You could have done. I could have done. And luckily in football, and I say this all the time, it's somewhat tank-proof for several seasons. Now, in the short term, I'm a believer in once you're 1-8, you know, 2-13, there is no point in winning meaningful games in December. Because when you really suck, especially if you're going to fire the coach, there is going to be a lot of turnover on your roster. But losing in the short term in football does have benefits, right? For the Jags, it led to Trevor Lawrence this year. Once upon a time with the Indianapolis Colts, it led to Andrew Luck. It typically, if there's a great quarterback, leads to a really good quarterback. But I also think, and we talk about this all the time, and I know I live by this motto, you learn by doing. And anytime that I have learned in my life, it's typically been through failure. But every single one of those failures, whether it was being fired in the NFL when Chip Kelly came, whether it was having my radio show canceled, in both of those enormous failures in my life at the time, looking back now, I kind of laugh, but it is, at the time, it was devastating. I did not try to fail. I tried to succeed. And really, you know, judging my NFL career, it was pretty successful. That was just something you see in pro sports. It's out of your control. In radio, based on metrics, but really, the partner, the Raiders, there's a whole other story I've told it before, turned on me. But I was not trying to lose either one of those jobs. And like most companies, if you think about it, like when they go bankrupt, when a company goes under, and then a guy goes on to have a lot of success, he goes, you know, I learned the most from that incident. They were not trying to lose. When you breed a loser's mentality, and it's why in the NFL, every single year, every team is trying to win. It's why the process, trust the process, was ultimately so stupid. Because they were okay. They promoted losing once they got their core players. So losing was accepted. Losing is never accepted in football. Even that short term, like I remember when the Niners won that game late in the season at Seattle, I'm like, this is the dumbest shit ever. Kyle Shanahan, his players, happy as a pig in mud. They couldn't have been any more excited for the win at Seattle, who's a playoff team that year. It was a big deal. Like, they're trying to win. And I think sometimes that, I don't know if you've had a chance, on The Athletic, there was a really good story about the Mavericks and the dysfunction from the dude Mark Cuban hired, this professional gambler, Haralabob. And one of the issues it talked about was how terrible Haralabob was at dealing with people. He can't deal with the players. The other executives in the team fucking can't stand him. The coach doesn't really like him. The owner likes him. And someone asked me this question recently on a Middlecoff mailbag question. Why doesn't the NFL hire more outside-the-box thinkers? And I think they have. But at the end of the day, to be a general manager, a successful one, is more than just about picking players. I remember reading this book when I was in college. It was about networking. It was by a guy named Keith Ferrazzi. And, you know, one of the things that it's actually the only thing I specifically remember from the book, and this is when I thought I might go to work for like Wells Fargo or Morgan Stanley, talked about closing deals. And the key to closing deals was just getting the opportunity to get to a decision maker. And the easiest way to get to a decision maker was to go through the gatekeeper. And in business, a lot of times the gatekeeper is a secretary. The hardest person to get, like the CEO or the decision maker, you have to call their office, and it's usually someone else picks up. So if you can butter that person up, make that person like you, they control your eventual road to the person you want to get to. And in sports, and Sam Hinkie articles were written, terrible with agents. Agents hated him. And listen, you can say what you want about agents, and sometimes I think they're overrated. They do play a role. And if you do not get along with them in baseball, basketball, or football, I got news for you. You're kind of fucked. They are important. They are the gatekeepers. So this notion that anyone could do these jobs is not true. Like, I worked for a guy who's an outside-the-box, you know, hire at the time and just his path, Howie Roseman. Do you know one of Howie Roseman's best attributes? People like him in the business, a.k.a. the agents. He has very, very good relationships. That matters. So for a quote-unquote numbers guy, he's a great relationship guy with people outside the buildings. That's why historically, under his tenure, they sign a lot of players. They do a lot of deals. Like, that's important. So some of these quote-unquote nerdier guys who, you know, the media wants to run all these organizations and all these sports, well, if you can't deal with the agents, you don't have a fucking shot. That's part of the deal. Part of the deal also is, and you see what's going on with Gutekunst, is dealing with star players. I've seen it forever with the Golden State Warriors. Bob Myers, who was once an agent, worked for the big Arn Tellem, who was a huge NBA, the equivalent of like Tom Condon in the NFL. Bob Myers' best skill is dealing with personalities. Well, in the NBA, you got to deal with the personalities. Well, who struggles? If you're struggling dealing with agents, you might be struggling dealing with players too. And like one thing is, you see with the Raiders, my opinion and reading some of these stories about them with players, I don't think they're great at dealing with player agents. And that's an immediate uphill battle when you struggle at that. And Sam Hinkie could never do it. Haralabob, the dude, you know, kind of running the the Mavericks, star player can't stand them. So there is an element of winning breeds winning. Confidence comes from success. In any walk of life, you create confidence by, you just don't start out confident in whatever you do. The first time you start playing basketball, the first time you start your job, it takes reps. It takes building it up. It takes failures, but your failures usually come out of attempting to succeed because you go through kind of the ringer, right? Like the Browns, that Freddie Kitchen year was completely worthless. They got absolutely nothing out of it. It was pointless. It was a completely wasted season. Absolutely wasted. The reason they won last year is they fired him and got a new coach, and they created a new scheme. And luckily with football, like the Jets, say this, and this is why you never have to deal with quote-unquote trust the process, because once you start failing, like having a lot of failure in terms of wins and losses and your organization's in shambles, the Jets this year screwed it up because they ended up not getting Trevor Lawrence. Now maybe Zach Wilson ends up better. But ultimately, the season ends. They get rid of half the roster. They blow out the coaching staff. They hit the reset button. They start over. So, you know, I think there are some major flaws in trust the process. And like we always talk about with the NFL differentiating from the other sports, luckily it's just not going to be an issue. It's not even possible. You can't run an NFL team if you can't just do some basic things. And also assuming that you're just going to pick the right players is a crazy assumption. Because we know in the history of professional sports, but specifically football, in the first round, it's a 50-50 proposition. And then from every round, it goes down. I mean, so it's just, you don't even know when you are losing unless it's a can't-miss quarterback. And even those, do they truly exist? Is Trevor Lawrence truly a can't-miss player? Is there a chance that Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, or Zach Wilson is better than Trevor Lawrence? I think just based on the basic math, four guys versus one, the chances that one of those four is better than Trevor Lawrence, I'd say probably over 50-50. So trust the process is over, thank God. And luckily, we never have to worry about that on Sundays.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I wanted to touch on a polarizing topic, and it's Cole Beasley and his thoughts on the vaccination. I did a little research, talked to a couple NFL executives, and I have some thoughts in regards of what he said. Now, full disclosure, I have tried every possible time to avoid corona talk because we hear it every avenue of our life, and by the mid-June, I'm tired of it, you're tired of it, we're all tired of it. Here's another reality. Our opinions on it probably are not changing. I know mine's not. I would imagine yours isn't either. But Cole Beasley tweeted out this long, Instagrammed it probably too, statement of why he wants no part of the vaccine, feels the NFLPA is forcing them into it, and basically having a statement, I'll quit or retire before I get vaccinated. He also has another comment that I will get to in a minute. Now, he's scheduled to make $5.8 million. $5.8 million. I talked about it last week when someone asked me the question about the media harping on these players about getting vaccinated. And my take was simply like, I just got vaccinated recently. And I did it 100% for business purposes because my business is associated with the NFL. And they sent me rules for training camp. And it was going to be impossible to conduct business if I wasn't vaccinated. And I promise you this, while it's a historic amount of money this fall for my own business that I have on the line, it ain't $5.8 million. If I had $5.8 million on the line, you could stick the needle in my butt, in my leg, in both arms. I do not care. But again, I'm a business whore. Like I'm in this for the money. Like I've never argued that. And back to like Cole Beasley, I'm not afraid of corona. I've been around it. I got it. It didn't faze me. But I understand people that did messed them up. I understand people that were in society. My mother, who was over 70, who was a cancer survivor, was terrified of it. We all had different agendas, the wrong word, different things on the line when it came to Corona. Now, here's just a fact. My mother, like I said, and her generation, the baby boomers, were the generation that Corona was coming after, right? We have statistical measures. It has been said over and over by literally every scientist that Corona disproportionately impacts older people. And then younger people, it doesn't faze as much. And then a lot of these younger people, as NFL executives told me, coming into the season last year, that a large percentage of their players had gotten Corona, like a lot of people in America, right? Earlier in the year and then over the summer. A lot of those people were unfazed. Why? Because healthy young Americans, healthy young people, Corona doesn't impact as hard. Again, this is not Middlecoff's opinion. This is fact. So these players who have gotten Corona, not phased, every individual is different, is like, I don't want to get vaccinated. And as an executive told me last week, his team, not even close. Not even close to hitting the threshold. I've had several other executives say this, that they're a long way away. So the media, who all called Cole Beasley an idiot, moron, science denier, represented a lot of people. And one thing I see a lot with social media is the media, who all leans the same politically, represents their side. And they do it well, and they do it very loudly. And they do it, I don't think they take the best tactic. They talk down. They kind of have this intellectual superiority. But in their world, they think they're nailing it. Now, I also saw a statistic last week that 8% of America's on Twitter, and way less than that is actually active and tweeting. So it's actually a small sliver of society. Never forget that 50% of America do not think like that. And I think sometimes we forget that. Because again, Cole Beasley not only is not alone, represents a lot of players. Now, let's start with something. Why would the players think different, even beside the fact that it disproportionately doesn't impact them as hard, right, as older people? And they know it. A lot of these guys have had it. Well, two, where we're at, we act like Corona is black and white. That is pretty laughable. Whenever I see, this is not political. It's not. It's all been political. States picked and choose who was going to stay open, who had to close. I know in my state, by far the most radical state when it came to Corona, we were, in my opinion, a disaster. Over-aggressive. What we did in the fall with business lockdowns was a fucking embarrassment. Treated people like yo-yos. Again, where I stand, I think the school closures and the treatment of the kids was also a joke. Those are my opinions. You might be on the opposite. But I know this, in the middle of June, my opinion's not changing, and neither is yours, right? So when we get to the vaccine, we think it's just going to be the mess. The messaging of Corona for 14, 15 months was a disaster. When I went to Arizona a month ago, I had to wear a mask everywhere I went in California. I went in the plane, had to wear a mask. Immediately Arizona, no mask. So Corona's flying around stronger in California, but not in Arizona. When all these Arizona, Texas, Florida, all these southern states have been rocking and rolling for 6 months, it doesn't add up for a lot of people. It just doesn't. So a large percentage of people just question this. Not that Corona's not real. Not that it didn't impact people. Not that the virus is made up. But you can't just have the messaging all over the place and then just expect everyone to get on board. And listen, I can't relate to being an anti-vaxxer. If you give me a shot and you say, hey, this is going to help your business, boom, I took it. But like I said, I am not denying that. I didn't take the shot for the betterment of America. But I also did not take the shot because I didn't believe it would work. I got it unfazed. I didn't even get sick. I didn't feel anything. Now I got to get another one. But I got it for business this fall. And I think sometimes Cole Beasley had another statement. And he's 100% correct here. I understand completely why the NFL is doing what it's doing. Forcing people, without forcing them to get vaccinated. It gives them the freedom to make the most money possible if everyone is vaccinated. Ding, ding, ding. Well, yeah, Cole. You know what the NFL doesn't want to do? Do the political theater like the NBA is doing. The NBA, which has been the most vocal with pushing vaccinations in the bubble, still mandates their coaches wearing masks. I think it's fair to say that every coach in the NBA is vaccinated at this point. That's a joke. It's pretty embarrassing.
The NFL ain't into theater. The NFL is into the money. They don't want to have to pay for any testing. I don't blame them. I wouldn't either. That cost them a lot of money in the fall. They don't want to test anybody. They don't want to have to do any masks. They don't want to have to change any of their buildings. I don't blame them. The entire country is open now. So they don't want to have to worry about their product, which are the games. So they want everyone to get vaccinated so they don't have to worry about it. But as an executive told me, listen, he wasn't that comfortable getting the vaccine. And he was, in his words, kind of forced into it. Because if he didn't get it, he would be dropped tiers and he wouldn't be able to do his job. And he's not alone. And I think often the sentiment on the outside from the media, it helps me. Like, my friends aren't journalists. My friends are just normal people. Their opinion is often different from the overall opinion than I see on social media. It's actually the complete opposite. So, like, listen, Cole Beasley, he's got more conviction than me. Because I clearly would not leave $5.8 million on the table for a shot. But I also understand that, like, I think just a lot of people have really struggled this. Young people have never once been fazed by this virus. I'm not saying once it's in their body, but the way they look at it. And then when you couple that with a lot of them have had it and it didn't mess with them, why do you think why would they think they would need a vaccine? It's not the way. Plus your risk tolerance. Everyone's risk tolerance is different. Now, I'm also a private sector guy. So listen, every rule inside the building changes, right? Different businesses can mandate different things. This is somewhat of a slippery slope. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know exactly how discrimination lawsuits work with forcing people to do different things. I don't know. But this is a complicated issue. If you can't acknowledge that, I think you live in a little bit of a bubble and just need to have some different friends. Luckily for me, I have Republican friends, Democrat friends. I understand every side. I get it. And now I have opinions and I have thoughts and those don't change. Just like same with those people. Just like anyone listening. At this point in time, you have a belief and you ain't changing. A lot of people, Middlecoff, the lockdowns worked and you'll never change. I'll think you're a whack job. And you'll probably think the same about me. You know what? Forever, when I grew up, that was fine. We both disagreed. We moved on. Let's collaborate and do something great. Let's start a business together. Like a lot of people historically have worked together. Now it's like the left and the right, let's split America. It's like, can we just figure this out? But I just get back to the premise of he is not an outlier in this situation. He represents a lot of people in the league. And I think we need to just acknowledge that. And it's something that the media, who is the worst messenger for this by far, and I don't blame them. They have the ultimate white-collar job. They got to easily work from home and get paid, right? As I've said over and over, like most people in my life never got to work from home. I had a couple of white-collar friends, but most of them, even if they quote-unquote white-collar, construction, farming, like you don't get to, some of these industries, if you work in retail, didn't get to just press pause. They had to keep rocking and rolling. They didn't get to just stay home with their young children. They had to figure that out, and it was complicated, and it was a disaster for most people. So I think the quicker we learn to just understand, we don't have to agree, but just like get, like there is a reason these people think this way. I think we can be, we talk about progress all the time. It's not possible when we're just constantly arguing and thinking the other person's an idiot. And that this issue, I'm telling you, you heard it here first. When these teams, because it's going to get out, I bet a lot of teams, when they report for training camp, do not come close to hitting that vaccination threshold. I actually think it's going to be, if I had to guess, it'll probably be over 15 teams. Okay, I wanted to talk about another polarizing topic, stadiums and the financing of stadiums. And I've actually never been to Chicago, so I don't have a great feel for, you know, the geographical setup and the conversation that is going in terms of where this stadium would be, where they play now. Obviously, I think Soldier Field is downtown, but they're in an argument right now. The Bears, Soldier Field, the mayor, and then just this overarching conversation comes up is teams cannot let the government and the taxpayer pay for their stadium. And my answer to that is, why not? Why would you, if you didn't have to, spend your own money if someone else was willing to spend it? Just let's just start on that premise. I'm looking to buy something in Arizona right now. House, condo, I don't know. I'm actually going in a week, going to check them out. And let's say I have $200,000 cash, and I'm trying to buy something, $1 million, put 20% down. Instead of using my own $200,000, what if I could get someone else to put down the $200,000? And then I service the debt, whether I live there, whether I rent it out, and my benefit is being in that area and just, you know, being a part of that area. They're incentivizing me to come. Wouldn't I take that deal and just still have $200,000, do whatever I wanted? Hell, I could buy another place. Or would I tell them, no, I'm going to do this myself. I want this, especially if I'm going to own the thing either way. What, you're going to pay for it? Like, listen, I gave Mark Davis a lot of shit when he was leaving Oakland, and that was emotional because I knew a lot of season ticket holders and I knew what it meant to him. But in terms of a business deal, wait, you could spend a bunch of your own money in an area with kooky politicians that have a bunch of red tape. They're going to charge you up the ass. And even if you can't afford to do it, which they couldn't, it might not even pencil in the Bay Area. And you got to compete against another team. Or you go to Vegas where there is no red tape. They can do whatever they want and they're going to pay for it all and then let you own it. What would any human being do? And this notion that stealing tax dollars is like, I think when we say that out loud, it sounds good. Like, how can you take our hard-earned money? Anyone listen, we all pay it, right? We all pay taxes at some level. Well, I've lived in California. I grew up in Davis, California. We once, with our tax dollars, built a tunnel for toads. We built this new overpass, I think when I was in junior high. I think I've told this story. They spent $1 million to build a tunnel for the toads so they would be safe. Recently, a city council member in the city of Davis had gone to Amsterdam within the last 5 years. And the way they set up the roads, she saw something and she thought it would be a brilliant idea. So they implemented it over where my mom and brother live now. It has actually been the biggest disaster for traffic in the history of the city. They're going to have to go back and rip this up. So they spent the money on the project to like separate the lanes and make a much bigger bike lane. It has created just a disaster for every commuter, right? And they're going to have to rip it out and put it back to normal. Cost them a ton. We act like taking taxpayer dollars. This is why, listen, I hate taxes. Like, it's one of the biggest reasons I want to live or leave California is because we act, and it sounds great, like, you're taking it away from the innocent children, from the single moms. That's not what actually happens, at least in the state that I live in. The money that gets allocated, in my opinion, often gets wasted. It's why guys like Warren Buffett are often outspoken of, yeah, I feel more confident than I can allocate the resources. Because historically, would say, he is. He is more likely to help individuals than the government is. So this notion that if they can convince the government to give them free money that they shouldn't take it is laughable. It's actually pretty naive. Even David Tepper, someone shot me this DM the other day. He's very adamant that he wants to get money from Carolina. You'd say, he's got all this cash. In what world, if I give you $100, just pick a small, tiny amount, $20, and I say, you can either use that money on something or have someone else buy it for you and you keep the $20. There is not one human listening that would not let, especially if you don't owe them anything, you just get to, I mean, all you'd get to do is service the debt. Everyone would choose that. Now, a huge battle, depending on what city you live in and what politicians you're dealing with, it's a challenge. Like in California, they're not going to give you much money. We're very radical, even though we have an unlimited amount of taxpayer money, which we waste. But in some of these pro-business states, Vegas, boom, rock and roll, right? Nashville, Arizona, like some of these states are going to be more conducive to getting the money. But I will never fault an owner for paying for it. Or I mean, excuse me, taking the money. Just like Stan Kroenke. He was never going to get a lot of cash from LA. That's not the way we roll. But he spent $4, 5, 6 billion. It was really, really expensive. Now, maybe money meant nothing to him, which we know that's not true for any rich guy. Maybe it was just easier for him not to deal with the red tape. He just spent all the money. But if LA, of that $6 million, had given him two, no, you owe me this or you have to do this, he would have taken it. He just didn't want to waste time dealing with it because he knew he probably couldn't get it. But like when I see that the Bears are going to try to get, or just any team is going to try to get taxpayer money, I will never fault them. And if you are crushing them, if you're one of those people, you're being a little naive. Because every single business, I mean, literally America operates on politicians spending other people's money. That's the way the hierarchy of our society works. Without taxes, I mean, our society wouldn't roll. Now, we can nitpick how much we should all pay, but like, are you, and ultimately the argument of the anti-people are going to be like, it actually doesn't bring that much to the society. Well, I'd say my pushback would be like, we basically flush billions of dollars in different things all over the country down the drain every single year. So at least this does have some tangible impact of positive, right? People enjoy it. 70,000 plus go to all the games. Now, again, I have no problem with the city denying that, and that I think is going to happen a lot. But I'll also never question any owner that accepts the cash, no matter how much money he has in the bank, because we'd all do it. At John Middlecoff is the Instagram account. Fire in those DMs and get your questions right here. Middlecoff Mailbag. Start with Chris. Hey, Middlecoff, your podcast is fire. Woo-hoo-hoo! Have enjoyed your takes on viewer difference between the NFL and every other professional sports. I think somewhere along the line, the NBA and MLB decided that more games were better than quality of games. So do you think the NFL is making the same mistake by adding more games? I think it's definitely a risk. Now, they didn't add more games. They added one more game. They went from 16 to 17. And they added one more playoff game on both sides, right? They added an extra playoff game in the NFC and the AFC. It's always a risk. Whenever you expand, it's risky. But every single person I've ever met in the business world have been consistent with the messages, if you're not growing, you're dying. So I think part of expansion, right? I think baseball's messed with it. They've expanded their playoffs. I think basketball is toying with a lot of, you know, this play-in game, this midseason tournament. You're always trying to take steps forward. And listen, football got lucky. Their sport, if the NFL could play five games a week, they would. But you just can't in football. You can play at max one game, right? 4 days is the tipping point. That's the edge. You know, that Thursday game, that initial pushback probably 7-8 years ago, eventually everyone started making so much money, people just shut up about it. But that is baseball. Obviously, if you're playing baseball, you play every day. Now, personally, I would set it to 100 games. Make more urgency, maybe higher television ratings, but what if television ratings didn't go up? And you just cut your inventory by 60 games? That's losing a lot of money. So I do think it's a tough spot for both teams. That would be my recommendation, but I bet if you really got a breakdown from their financial officers, from the TV ratings, just because if let's say we cut the NBA season in half, we went from 82 games to 41. You got 21 home games and 20 away games. Obviously, it would differ from the teams. Do we think this for sure NBA ratings would be really high? You'd assume they would go up. There'd be more interest, but I don't think that's a guarantee. Same thing with baseball if you cut it in half. And really, their sports have been more predicated, because they have more inventory, on the gate receipts, selling tickets. Right? The NFL, the ticket sales and the suite sales, that's just yacht money for Dan Snyder, Jerry Jones, and company. That's just, you know, third home in Aspen. Or a home in Spain, or paying for their plane type money. They make their money from the TV revenue. That's where the real cash operates. And it's a lot of cash for baseball and basketball, but they make a ton from the gate receipts. It's just not the same with the NFL. Hey, John, enjoy the podcast all the way from Dublin, Ireland. I'm feeling pretty pessimistic about the short and medium term for the New England Patriots. To me, Mac Jones looks like a backup at best, and Belichick's offensive drafting has been highly questionable in recent years. Based off last year, he's too good of a coach to end up drafting high enough to nab a true franchise quarterback. What are your thoughts? Are we doomed to be mediocre for years, or can we get back on top? I think the days of being back on top are over. That went bye-bye with a guy named Tom Brady. I do think you have the potential to be a playoff team this year. If they made the playoffs this year, that'd be a really big deal. And they drafted Mac Jones at 15th overall. Like, Mac Jones is going to be the New England Patriots quarterback at minimum for 3 years. And he would have to be a disaster. But he's getting some time. He's getting some time. And I think they're too good of coaching staff with Josh and him to not figure out how to utilize him, even like Kirk Cousins. You guys have too much talent on the team. You bought all these players. Obviously, you draft Mac. You draft the Alabama defensive tackle really high. But to me, you signed a bunch of players. You get a bunch of guys back off the Corona list. If I had to guess right now, New England Patriots record, I'd guess 9-8. 9-8 or 10-7. That would be 9-10 wins. So if you gave me the over-under at 8.5, and 8 now is not 8-8 anymore, it's 8-9, I would take the over. Now, does 9 or 10 wins get you in the playoffs? It might not. It took 11 to get to the playoffs last year for the AFC. Think about the Raiders went 8-8 last year and missed the playoffs by 3 games. So it's different. The AFC is stacked. So it's going to be difficult. But your days of dominating like the Patriots once did are just over. As a listener to your podcast the past few months, I've gotten the impression that you didn't really enjoy your time working in the NFL. You said my quality of life improved drastically once I stopped working in the NFL. Can you expand on that a bit? Maybe what are the two things you did not like about working in the NFL, and what are the two things you did enjoy? When I worked in the NFL, I really enjoyed it. Now, it was difficult, but you have to remember, in my 3 years working in the NFL, my first year, when I got hired by the Eagles, I think I made $25,000. My next year was like $45,000 and then $50,000. So I was not making any money. Now, I wasn't as into money as I became probably the last 5 or 6 years. So that didn't faze me, but I didn't have any money. Now, luckily, when you work for a team, your dry cleaning, your gym, your food, like a lot of your expenses are taken care of. So you actually probably have a little more money than you think, but it was a very stressful job for not much cash. Now, that's the nature of getting in your foot in the door in the league. You're not going to make that much to start off. So I didn't make any money. And I would say, secondly, when I really felt like I came into my own is when I got the West Coast job, and I was meant to do that. I think I was made to be a road scout, like if I was going to work in the NFL or do the college, just college scouting. But, you know, who knows? If I'd stay in the league, director of college scouting one day, whatever. I did that for 1 year and I got fired because our team sucked, right? It just was a disaster. Michael Vick got hurt. We went 4-12 and he got fired. So the best year for me professionally, the team was awful and it led to me ultimately losing my job. The first 2 years, like, pro scouting really wasn't for me. And really my first year, it was more just doing, actually my first year was awesome, very stressful, but just getting to do everything for like the coaching staff and the GM. It was really cool. My second year as a pro scout, I hated. I'm not wired that way to sit inside for 15 hours a day. Working a lot doesn't faze me. I work a lot now. I wake up at 6, I walk right into the office. You know, sometimes I'll look up, it'll be 7, 8 at night, I'm still working. Like, I've never had a problem work ethic-wise. The one thing that really changed in my life is, like, money became important. Like, I wanted to do certain things. And I've been able to make a lot more doing this. Like, I immediately went to radio and doubled my salary. Think about that. I went to radio, doubled my salary at a 2-hour radio show. So it's like, that was pretty eye-opening. And I met some of my best friends, like, in life. Guys that I still close with and talk with. Guys that I consider really, really close friends. So, the negatives were more, when I started having individual success, the team fell apart. And I didn't make that much money. But at the time, I didn't really care. Like, I would have done the road job for $10,000. Right? You would have made me the West Coast scout, just pay my expenses, break even, I would have been fine. So at the time, the money didn't faze me. I think part of the way I talk about it now is my life has changed. I changed as a human being. But I would not be here doing this if it wasn't for that. So I never dispute, like, I needed that point in time in my life. And I was lucky enough to be in my mid-20s, wasn't married, didn't have kids, so it didn't matter. So my time in the NFL, maybe I am more doom and gloom about it the way I talk about it now, but I enjoyed it back then a lot. I mean, it changed my life. Football changed my life. It really did. Fresno State and the Philadelphia Eagles. It led to all these opportunities to where ultimately now I get to work with Colin Cowherd. Would not have been possible. I could not have broken into the radio business with just being a radio guy at 30 years old. No one would have cared about my NFL opinions. I just would have been like every other, you know, guy out there talking with no resume. But I had a football resume. And maybe I was always meant to do more of this stuff. It just led me here. I'm a big believer in everything's happens for a reason. If you would have told me in 2011 I'd be doing this, I probably wouldn't have believed you. Now I can't see myself doing anything differently. But this life has also allowed me to do a bunch of other things, right? I can just have a bunch of different business ventures, right? I'm going to be able to do things that I probably wouldn't have been able to do. The biggest positive of the job I have now is I can have like 7 jobs. I could buy, I could become, I could do whatever I want, whenever I want. And maybe I was meant to do that. And so like some people are just like born to be entrepreneurs. Some people are born with a vision to be a general manager. I wasn't necessarily born with that vision. I have passions and they kind of get sculpted. You know, everyone would want to be like Tiger Woods, ready to just hit the ground running and know exactly what they want to do. Or I remember being around Howie and he wanted to be a GM from the moment he was like 10 years old. I didn't have those type visions about working in the NFL 2 years previously before working there. I didn't know like I was going to be an entrepreneur and start my own business 5 years ago. And things just happen and I kind of roll with it. And then I'm led there by things that I enjoy, but I'm led there by the things that happen to me. And it all is because of my stint in the National Football League. So I think listen, I am very, very lucky. I say it all the time. I would have taken any job, a Jags, the Vikings, you name a team, that I got hired by Andy Reid and Howie Roseman, who I got to be on a staff with Sean McDermott, Matt Nagy, Deuce Staley, Louis Riddick, Phil Savage, Brett Veach, right? Hell, David Culley's head coach now. I got to be around all the. I didn't know. It happened. So it changed my life. So it's, you look back different on different angles and elements of it. There were parts of it while I did it, like I was like, I'd be better at something else. And then I got to do it, like I said, the college scouting, which was awesome. Now, part of it sucked. Like, I drove everywhere. I had a Honda Accord, and on the West Coast, you have from Arizona up to Washington through Colorado. It is an enormous landmass. Not as many schools. Like, there are actually more schools in the SEC area, because you have the SEC, the ACC, a bunch of little schools, you know, some of the non-Power Fives, like the UCFs. Mine is basically just the Pac-12 and the Mountain West, which is really just San Diego State, Fresno State, Nevada, right? And then a couple of Montana's, Weber States, but those are hit or miss. So it's basically the Pac-12 and some of the Mountain West. But they are really far apart, right? From Stanford and UC Davis and Cal up to Oregon is a long way. And me, in that Honda Accord with Sirius XM radio, made that drive countless times. Boise to Sacramento, made that drive. Arizona to LA to Vegas to Utah, made those drives. So it's just like, God damn. Now, I could do it back then. Could I do it now for that amount of money? Zero chance. Because I value my time's worth way more than that now. And I've been able to make way more than that now. But I wouldn't have been able to do that without that, you know, just experience. And I really value it. Even though I maybe sound negative about it, I'm truly not as negative as I enjoy just being a part of it. I really did. I've listened to every episode of 3 and Out, and yes, I subscribe through your feed. Thanks. I'm curious what your opinion about the offensive lineman the Seattle Seahawks drafted from Florida, Stone Forsythe. As a long Seahawks fan, I believe this is exactly the guy that the Hawks needed to draft to protect Russ. It seems like he fell pretty far in the draft, and I really don't understand why. This seems to be a nice addition As much as I dislike things about Pete, I'm confident he got a great player with this pick. Well, I saw this question and I looked it up before because I wasn't quite sure who this player was. And I saw that this player, I think, has a lot of parallels to Trent Brown, who is now the starting left tackle for the New England Patriots, who was with the Niners. Trent Baalke drafted him in the 7th round. He was ultimately traded to the Patriots, won a Super Bowl. The Raiders signed him for a ton of money. And like Trent Brown, this player, I think, would be considered an underachiever. Now, there was no disputing, once you saw Trent Brown, he's bigger than every human on the field. Same will be with this guy. It's just about, does he want to do it? Now, I think they're a little bit different type player. This guy's not as aggressive in the run game, better pass protector. Trent Brown initially was a better run player than a pass protector. He's become a really good player. But I think when you have elite physical specimens like this guy, like Trent Brown, linemen, big guys. Lewis Riddick taught me this, and I've said this on the show before, and I can relate. I can get a little chubby as well. Big guys can get inherently lazy. And you saw this a lot historically, like with Shaq and just big guys in the NBA. Like, they're not running up the court. They get tired faster than the guy that weighs 100 pounds less than they do. So you have to condition them to be really aggressive. Now, if you can coach them and get the most out of them, sky's the limit. Trent Brown has been one of the great 7th-round picks of all time because he's an elite player and you got him in the 7th round. Now, he comes with some baggage. You know, he's hit or miss in terms of effort sometimes. And I think that's the question mark on this player. But they're taking a big flyer, and we'll see. I got no problem taking big swings in the 6th and 7th round. I think you're more likely to hit a big swing than to take like some lower floor, can't miss, like this guy's going to make our team on special teams. Because once you get to the 6th, 7th round, there is no such thing as some low floor. Everyone could be a major whiff. You might as well swing for the fences. Unless he's a bad guy, which I don't know anything about this guy's character, but when the guys have character red flags, then they're pretty risky. There's a reason he was there. New fan here, Vikings fan. What are your thoughts on the NFC North if Aaron Rodgers is still the quarterback for Green Bay? I think they're going to win the NFC North. So if Aaron Rodgers goes nowhere and shows up at training camp, the Packers aren't just the team to beat. I think they're the second best team in the NFC behind Tampa Bay. And they have the second best roster in the NFC behind Tampa Bay. I think it's really close. As we saw them play, it was a really close game. If they get traded, they clearly are very, very up in the air. Heard you on Colin's feed and subscribed myself to yours. Wondering if we could talk baseball for a hot minute. Born and raised in Baltimore and a diehard Ravens and Oriole fan. Cedric Mullins is absolutely crushing it and no one outside of Baltimore even knows. What other MLB players come to your mind that are producing at high levels completely under the radar? I think it comes at the highest levels. Shohei Ohtani, last week, obviously there's 7 days in a week, hit 6 home runs and won a game. I think if we looked at the last 50 years of baseball, and he didn't win a game because he came in and out of, right, the bullpen. He started the game. They play the Giants this, I think, in 2 days. I can't wait to watch him. He hit 6 home runs and won a game as a starting pitcher. If someone in the NFL did the equivalent of that, I don't even know. Let's say in a game, threw 3 touchdowns and also played linebacker and had 7 tackles. I think we would talk about that as one of the greatest games ever played in the history of the league. He played quarterback and he played linebacker safety. That is, it doesn't parallel itself exactly what Otani's doing. It would be one of the biggest stories in America. I don't even think people are talking about Otani. I think Otani is one of the greatest athletes in the history of the world, what he's doing. In the history of baseball, in 70, 80 years since like Babe Ruth, there hasn't been a guy that pitched and played offense and dominated at both. And that's what this guy's doing in the big leagues. Think how often, whoever you played high school football with, most guys on my high school football team, the top 5 or 6 players, played both ways. Quarterback, some of the linemen, linebackers, some wide receiver corners. Right, your best players in high school typically never come off the field. Once you get to college, that ends. You just pick a position. No one in the pros plays offense and defense, right, in football. one in baseball, like, you either pitch or you hit. You got to pick a lane. This guy's doing it both. So I think the best player in baseball this year has been Shohei Ohtani. And I really don't think he's as big a story as he... 20 years ago, like 1996, it would be the biggest story in America by a mile. Tom Brady claiming that, you know, whatever he said on the Shop promo, LeBron show for HBO, is a bigger story than Shohei Ohtani. Think about that. So it just, I just think baseball, it's just not as mainstream anymore, because your biggest hosts now, the people that used to just talk, Dan Patrick, Colin Cowherd, whoever, Bill Simmons, Ryan Russillo, pardon my take, they just don't talk baseball. Me, I love baseball. I'm still a sucker for baseball. I don't talk about it. I don't, why would I waste time? Can't make any money doing it. I mean, it's just, it's kind of sad. But yeah, I think it starts at the top. As a lifelong Bengals fan, I'm pumped about Burrow. Am I crazy for thinking this guy could shape up to be one of the best in the league? Getting him hurt last year really pissed me off because we saw it coming. I was so upset when it happened, I had to turn the TV off and not watch the rest of the game. Is it unrealistic to think the line gets its act together, they could win 9 or 10 games? I think that's a pretty dramatic jump, right? They had the number one overall pick in the draft 2 years ago. They had the number 5 overall pick in this draft. So they went from number 1, number 5, to 9 wins. If they went 9-8, I think Zach Taylor would be the coach of the year pretty easily. But I'm with you. Burrow looks fantastic. He's coming back from a major knee injury. Their defense stinks. Their division is fantastic. They are easily the worst team in the division. So I if they played in a shitty division, maybe they get to 7 wins, maybe, best case. How do they win a game in their division? I think it's very, very difficult. I think they could be good and go 1-5 in the division pretty easily. And when I say good, like, much improved. We also, I liked him on McVay's podcast. Sounds like a cool guy. I'd like to drink some beers with him. I don't know if he's a good head coach. First time, long time. About to head to San Diego, best place to eat. Keep the podcast coming. You know, I haven't been to San Diego in such a long time. It's kind of sad. I think San Diego, I know John Rahm said this, it's one of the best cities in America. Easily. Hands down. Bar none. Undeniable. Just go to like a hole-in-the-wall Mexican joint and get like a carne asada burrito. I've never been in San Diego in my adult life when I had a lot of money, so I was never going to nice restaurants. So I'm the wrong guy to ask. Sir, I want to know, does Brady get 3 separate contracts with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? 1 is the player, 2 is the assistant GM, 3 is the assistant coach. I don't think that's the case, but that'd be pretty funny if he did. Okay, last one. Listening to your take on Tua's interceptions in practice, totally agree. You can't take much away from a system that is specifically used to try what does and does not work for your players. Regardless of what we saw from Tua on the field last year, Tua is still young, true, and with less than a full season under his belt, coming off an extended period of not playing. The rust had to be knocked off. Another thing about player performance in practice as compared to real game situations is that many players are great in practice but can't execute in the game. Also very true. We don't ever give much attention to players playing well during practice when we know they can't produce the same way in the game when it counts. The difference is, once the season starts, no one sees practice against except the coaches and the players, and the coaches are never going to admit the guy sucks in practice. So we don't actually know that information. Inconsistent, yeah. So basically he was agreeing with me. I thought it was a good take. You agree? I think that's the only take to be had. I will keep saying, though, I do not just like, I wouldn't bet on Tua being a Pro Bowl quarterback this year. I will be stunned if he's actually an above average quarterback. I expect probably average, probably a little better than what we saw, but I think he's still going to have some real struggles. Small, injury prone, not a great arm, but their team should be better. A lot of pressure on him. I think he is one of the most fascinating players in the league this upcoming season. When it comes to production, when it just comes to interest. I think no matter what team you're a fan of, it's like you just kind of want to peek at Tua. Like, what does he look at? Especially because the Dolphins are pretty good, right? They should be a team, if he is good, that makes the playoffs. If I told you Justin Herbert was on the Dolphins, I think we'd go, that's a 12-win team. That's 12-5.
I'd say they go 12-5.
Tua, yet to be determined. Appreciate everyone listening. Share it with your friends. Subscribe to the feed. Slide up into those DMs. Adios.